Music of Peter Schickele. This is the songs from his Serenade 4-3. This is Listen Adventurously on WORT Madison. Happy Eclipse Day.
First, the news.
I'm Debbie Russ with the BBC News. Hello. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is coming under pressure from within his coalition government not to abandon plans for an assault on Rafah in southern Gaza. Israel's far-right National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, has warned Mr. Netanyahu that he'll withdraw support unless the offensive goes ahead. His comments follow the pullout of some Israeli troops from southern Gaza. Our correspondent, Lise Doucette, is in Israel.
Israel's Defense Minister Yoav Gallant said that the troops will just be resting and preparing for more military operations in Gaza. But here in Jerusalem today, there's speculation as to whether this marks the end of Israel's ground operations or simply a pause as Israel prepares for the offensive against the southern corner of Gaza, Rafah.
Palestinians who've returned to the wrecked city of Khan Yunis in Gaza have spoken of the widespread destruction left behind in the wake of the withdrawal of Israeli forces on Sunday. Some said they'd been unable to locate their homes beneath huge mounds of rubble. Bodies are still being removed from collapsed buildings. This resident described how his family's properties had been destroyed.
May Allah avenge whomever was responsible. Three houses of our family, one house here and one house there and the other there, all three are gone. This is what is left from home, so I can show the whole world so they can know the struggles of the people in Gaza and how they are living. We're living in Gaza as skeletons.
Hamas has played down reports of progress at talks in Cairo aimed at agreeing a ceasefire in Gaza in return for the release of Israeli hostages. A Hamas official told Reuters that there was nothing new because the Israeli position had not changed. But Egyptian security sources are quoted as saying that progress has been made. Donald Trump says abortion rights, expected to be a key issue in November's US presidential election, should be decided by individual states. He said he was proud to be responsible for the Supreme Court decision 2 years ago ending a federal right to abortion and said the people would now decide.
The states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people.
One of the world's biggest chip makers is to build a third factory in the United States. The U.S. government is offering the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company up to $12 billion in grants and loans to build a facility in Arizona. You're listening to the World News from the BBC.
Spring has sprung and vegetable seedlings are quickly growing. Fair Share CSA Coalition will get the conversation flowing. Tune in to the Access Hour on Monday, April 8th at 7 p.m. to hear about the hard work it takes to get local food on your plate. You'll learn lots about community-supported agriculture and vegetable farming. Hear stories from staff, farmers, and apprentices. Oh, how charming. We want to build resilient local food communities. Who knows? Maybe you'll learn an innovative farming technique, or you'll be signing up for a CSA next week. That's the Access Hour on Monday, April 8th at 7 p.m. on WORT Madison.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Budget Bicycle Center's used bicycle showroom located at 930 Regent Street. Open for curbside service estimates and sales, 251-1663. More information on Budget Bicycles services for new and used bicycles is available on the web at budgetbicyclectr.com.
Good morning, it's 8:05 and you're tuned to the Monday 8 o'clock buzz on WORT 89.9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org. This is Brian Standing. Listen to Wisconsin rolled up 48,000 protest votes for uninstructed delegation in last Tuesday's Democratic presidential primary election, twice their stated target. So, what's next? We talk with Listen to Wisconsin campaign organizer Rima Ahmad. The Mental Health Warrior Film Festival highlights the work of filmmakers who have broken through barriers and stigma. Producer Nicholas Wooten will interview filmmaker and festival organizer Max Blaska. And the Wisconsin Book Festival celebrates National Poetry Month with a reading by three poets hailing from Texas, Madison, and Mississippi. We'll hear from Joshua Burton, Patricia Humienic, and Sadia Hassan. We'll have all that, plus some announcements, the Outdoor Adventure Report, and some tasty tunes served up by our brand new engineer, John Wilson. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz, John. All that's coming up right after this.
I was lying on the grass of Sunday morning of last week, indulging in my self-defeat. My mind was thugged out least above, it's all twisted wrong and neat. Uncomfortable, 3 feet deep. Now the fuzzy stare from not being there in a confusing morning week impaired my tribal lunar speak. And of course you can't become if you only say what you would have done.
It's 8:09. You're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz on WORT. This is Brian Standing. As the Israel-Hamas war now enters its seventh month with at least 40,000 dead and 2.5 million people displaced from their homes, it's worth remembering that the United States supplies 66% of Israel's military budget. Activists here in the U.S. distressed at the Biden administration's continued support for the Israeli war effort have encouraged voters to cast protest votes in state Democratic presidential primaries. Here in Wisconsin, the Listen to Wisconsin campaign urged voters to vote for uninstructed delegates in the April 2nd state presidential preference primary. The group had hoped to get at least 20,000 votes in a protest to send a message to the Biden campaign. They got more than twice that number, 48,000 votes for uninstructed delegates, nearly 9% of the total votes cast. So, what happens next? Joining us now to help answer that question is Listen to Wisconsin campaign director Rima Ahmad. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz.
Hi, good morning.
So, Tell us a little bit about what uninstructed delegates are. I mean, we understand if we cast votes for delegates for, you know, Joe Biden, that they're going to go to the Democratic convention in Chicago, and that's how they're going to cast a ballot. Are there actually delegates who have no direction at all, who can make up their own mind?
Yeah, so there are a number of states across the country, Wisconsin being one of them, where you can send delegates that can essentially make up their mind at the convention on which candidate that they will support and vote for. So in Wisconsin, that's called uninstructed. In other states, there's uncommitted, non-committed, no preference, and so forth. So we're very fortunate to have this democratic tool in our state.
So Listen to Wisconsin is only one of many campaigns going on around the country. You mentioned that there's places they're called different things, but the general idea is the same. How many delegates are likely to show up in Chicago with the complete freedom to vote for whoever they choose?
Yeah, you know, right now I think the tally is up just under 30. So I want to say 25, 27. But the truth is, you know, the delegate strategy is one that is being led in a really beautiful and incredible way by the Uncommitted National Movement. But here in Wisconsin, you know, our strategy was a little different. You know, we have the opportunity with uninstructed to get delegates, but in a place like Wisconsin, where our elections are razor thin, decided by less than 1% in the last couple presidential election cycles, we knew that our lever of power was the sheer number of votes we could get, especially in a primary election where at the top of the ticket, there otherwise isn't a challenge. And so our goal was always about turning out the margin of victory to be able to push our administration towards policy change and less about delegates going to the DNC.
So what happens now, both from the Wisconsin standpoint and from the sort of the national uncommitted standpoint? What you've done far better than you expected. You've sent a pretty clear message that there's a number of people who are unhappy with the current presidential, Democratic presidential, the presumptive nominee, Joe Biden. What is there a dialogue going on between Listen to Wisconsin and the Biden campaign? And are there particular platform changes or immediate action from the Biden administration you would like to see happen that would satisfy your demands?
Certainly. I mean, well, I just want to note that 48,162 votes from for uninstructed within the Democratic presidential primary is a clear message. Like you said at the top of this call, more than double the margin of victory that Biden won Wisconsin by in 2020. And the demand is clear that without an immediate and permanent ceasefire and an end to military aid to Israel, his support among Wisconsin Democrats is insufficient to win re-election in November. And so we're urging the president to heed this message. This message is coming out of not only Wisconsin, again, a critical state for the pathway to the presidency in November. We were the tipping point state last time around. We will likely be so again this year. But he's received this message from a majority of Americans that are saying loud and clear that Gaza needs a permanent ceasefire and this administration must impose it by ending military funding. And I'll just say a little bit more that Wisconsin voters don't want billions of our tax dollars going to ending life abroad. Our voters want, we are voters of conscience who believe that wherever you come from and whatever you look like, we all deserve safety, freedom, and dignity, and we will not stand for genocide. So I can't emphasize enough just how important it is that because we were able to turn out not simply the margin of victory, but again, more than double that, which, by the way, is historic, and no other one of these states that have run protest vote campaigns has the protest vote reached the margin of victory. And we're just so fortunate that we were able to accomplish that in Wisconsin, despite the rain and the sleet and the snow, as folks may remember Election Day was last week. But again, there's just a resounding message coming from the very base that mobilized for the Biden-Harris ticket in 2020 saying, listen to us. Heed our calls. We want to support life. We want to save lives, and in the process, save democracy.
So, with the election in the rear view and the success behind that, what is Listen to Wisconsin focusing on now?
Well, importantly, this campaign came out of some incredible organizing happening through a broad coalition of grassroots organizations all across the state, organizations that represent different faiths and backgrounds, again, different experiences, all living here in Wisconsin. And so those organizations are going to continue to organize. We're going to continue to share with our elected officials, both locally, statewide, and certainly going all the way up to the top of this administration, that you cannot guarantee our votes, that we need to see policy change if we stand a chance of securing Wisconsin and saving democracy against fascism later on this year in November. And so we will continue to amplify that message. We know that there are community members that will be trying to deliver that message as Biden is coming into the state tomorrow. And we are prepared to, there are folks within our membership that are already hoping to be delegates, to run as Biden delegates, going into the DNC, and to continue to take this message from Wisconsin Democrats, by the way. The vote was firmly on the Democratic ticket, mobilizing a base of voters who have previously supported this administration and came out to vote in 2020 as such, to say, we need you to pay attention to us right now, because we do want to save lives and we want to save democracy. And that's going to require some drastic policy changes on the part of this administration with regards to Gaza.
Have you had any direct contact with the Biden campaign or with the Biden administration?
No.
Have you attempted to get in touch with them?
We have not made a direct attempt beyond sending a very clear message on Election Day last week that we are the margin of victory in the state. And to be able to turn that out again in a primary election with expected, what we were going into the election was expecting low voter turnout. And what we saw is an incredible surge of voters from all across the state saying we are, now I'll borrow Michigan's language, right? We are not committed to how this administration is moving forward when it comes to handling Gaza, and we want to save lives. We want to save lives. We want this administration to take this call seriously, because we know what's at stake later on this year in November, and only drastic changes in our policy will result in any type of opportunity for folks to turn around and vote in November.
As you mentioned, the president will be in Madison tomorrow. Are you planning a activist presence at any of the president's appearances?
We are not directly planning stuff, but I do know that different community grassroots groups are indeed going to be present and expressing their voices as the president comes to town.
And tell us about any communication or coordination you have with some of these campaigns going on in other states. How much contact do you have, say, with folks in, say, Michigan or Minnesota?
Yeah, it's really beautiful. As a Midwesterner through and through, it's been beautiful to see just our neighbors show up as well. So first being inspired by what happened in Michigan, and then a week later seeing our neighbors in Minnesota turn out, it put a lot of pressure on us in Wisconsin to also, take the baton and make a really good showing for this protest vote. And I'll say that we have been in communication with some of the organizers in Michigan and in Minnesota. Indeed, some of those organizers joined us in Milwaukee when we had our official campaign launch on March 19th, the first day of early voting. And so it was beautiful to actually make this connection, that so many of our communities across this region are saying loud and clear that, we want to save lives, we want to save democracy, and it's going to take drastic policy changes with regards to Gaza and the ongoing genocide in order for us to see that happen. But materially, some of the same volunteer infrastructure that came out of the incredible efforts in Michigan, they offered to us here in Wisconsin, and we said, thank you. We will gladly use some of these volunteers, help us to spread the word, to make sure that more and more of our neighbors out here in the state know about this option, because uninstructed is a little obscure. Even the fact that it's called uninstructed and not something like uncommitted, which, had gained a lot of notoriety in the last couple months. Folks were like, wait, is this our version of uncommitted? And we were able to say, yes, it is. But being able to leverage that volunteer base was such an asset to helping us reach as many of our community members as possible all across the state and let them know that we had this opportunity to voice our anti-war, pro-peace message to this administration and hopefully move Biden towards the type of policy changes we need to save lives and save democracy later this year.
Now, in recent weeks, we've seen the Biden administration take a somewhat tougher stance on Israel. The killing of aid workers recently seems to have changed some of the Biden administration's approach to Israel. We're hearing out of Cairo now that there may be some progress on a temporary ceasefire. Are these enough, or do you need to see more?
We absolutely need to see more. I think these words ring hollow when at the same time that we are, this administration is talking about wanting to send more humanitarian aid, or the fact that they are angry with Israel's or Netanyahu's response. That this administration, that Biden is pushing for $18 billion in fighter jets going to Israel. This is, there is such incredible dissonance here that it's startling. So, everything that has happened to date rings hollow when every single day upwards of 60 children are essentially killed on our dime. This is untenable. So anything short of demanding a permanent ceasefire through ending military aid to Israel will not suffice for our pro-peace, anti-war voters.
All right. We've been speaking with Listen to Wisconsin campaign manager Rema Ahmad. Thank you so much for joining us on the 8 o'clock buzz.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be back with the Outdoor Adventure Report and the Song of the Week coming up right after this. It's 8:24. You're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz right here on WORT. And it's time, as we do each and every week, for a check-in on the great outdoors with the Outdoor Adventure Report with master naturalist Paul Noldner. Take it away, Paul.
Good morning on this beautiful morning, Brother Brian. And thank you, WORT, for covering all things natural. Your weekly Outdoor Adventure Report is brought to you by Madison Fun, Friends of Urban Nature, which is a partnership of parks, environmental, and friends groups connecting Madison communities and kids with nature everywhere all year round. Enjoy free, fun, welcoming, diverse, fully accessible, family and kid-friendly, naturalist-guided educational adventures every week, along with other events in Madison parks and natural areas hosted by local nature groups. Outings are free. No registration required unless noted. No special equipment is needed to enjoy the great outdoors, to show up enjoying the fun. There's a major solar eclipse this week on Monday, if you haven't heard about it yet. I have my glasses on right now, peaking about 2 p.m. in Wisconsin. If you're outside, according to weather.com, you may notice bees stop buzzing, birds stop singing, crickets stop chirping, and chickens go to roost because they think it's night. Some owls may hoot and bats and nighthawks fly about. On the other hand, pet dogs and cats and coyotes and other wild critters seem to not notice quite as much. But according to National Geographic, Italian monk Ristoro d'Arezzo reported in 1239 that all the animals and birds were terrified and the wild beasts could be easily caught. In other words, they are probably just as confused and amazed and awed by this strange phenomenon as humans have been for centuries. Cornell Labs will be recording changes in bird radar activity. The NASA-backed Eclipse Soundscapes Project will gather audio recordings and observations that you and other people send into them. You can be a citizen scientist by using the free iNaturalist app to take pictures and record your notes about what critters are doing. For example, are critters remembering to wear their eclipse sunglasses? This past week, Madison Parks held a park and open space public meeting at Bell Phillips Memorial High. See the Madison Parks website for more opportunities for your public input. Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance led an evening walk at Turkey Marsh to hear the sounds of birds and other species at dusk. See the WIBNA website to register for more great outings. UW student Audubon led a student bird outing Saturday morning. Email Audubon Society UW at Gmail to connect up every Saturday. An enthused bunch of nature lovers aged 8 to 80. Join me on a migration magic at Tenney Park with flyovers of magnificent white pelicans, tree swallows already claiming a bluebird box, and other beautiful sightings. Some hardy folks join Kathleen Wolf for a rainy nature walk at Cherokee Marsh to learn about foraging and stewardship, while young squirrels danced about the open woodland, demonstrating how natural food sources are important to them, too. Coming up this week, Wisconsin Conservation Congress annual spring hearings is an opportunity for all Wisconsinites to provide their input on topics of environmental importance. Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance encourages you to take the time to fill out their survey questions. The most directly or indirectly impact birds and habitat, including phasing out lead hunting with firearms by 2030 and educating the public on the risk of lead in all DNR hunting and fishing materials. Educate the public to keep cats indoors because domestic cats kill an estimated 2.4 billion birds each year in the United States, in addition to the billions more wild animals and reptiles. Increasing monitoring and educating the public on declining grassland birds that are in dire need of protection, and urging power line companies not to mow low native vegetation in summer that provides key habitat for important native species like the monarch butterfly and nesting songbirds. You can see the Wisconsin DNR Spring Hearings webpage to register your opinions in each county on today, Monday, April 8th at 6 p.m., or to register your opinions online starting noon Wednesday, April 10th until noon Saturday, April 13th. On Thursday, April 11th at 12:15, seniors are invited to join a free nature close-up bird and nature adventure at Warner Park Community Recreation Center. Many things in nature are even more beautiful and interesting the closer you look. Naturalist Kathleen Wolf will help you look and learn about some of the fascinating details and take you on a fairly accessible walk outside if the weather is nice. This is free, fun, welcoming, and seniors can bring a friend or family member if they wish, and they can register for a free lunch at 11:30 before the program and transportation if needed by calling 608-512-0000 extension 4006 in advance. Join the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance and Friends of Cherokee Marsh Friday, April 12th, 6:30 at the North Unit to view the sky dance of the American woodcock at dusk and look for sandhill cranes, Wilson snipe, Bonaparte's gulls, and other spring migrants. See swibirds.org to register or get on the waiting list. On Saturday, April 13th at 2:30, nature lovers, families, and kids are invited to a free educational pasture to prairie bird and nature adventure at Owen Park with Sudeep Samanta with Friends of Owen and retired conservation manager Cy Widstrand to walk in the restored prairies and woodlands and learn about their human and ecological history. Can you still see the old stone fence rows and other signs of the old farm fields? Nature is healing this area as native plants again take root and bloom well, and tall and beautiful. On Sunday, April 14 at 1:30, you're invited to go looking for ephemerals, wildflowers, on a bird and nature adventure at Turville Point with naturalist Alex Singer. Spring wildflowers take advantage of available sunlight before trees and bushes fully leaf out and provide important sources of nectar for birds or for bees before other plants bloom. Mark your calendar for the free annual Earth Week Madison Fun Bird and Nature Festival on Sunday afternoon, April 28 at Warner Park. Come anytime, noon to 4, for the ongoing free live raptor show and fun, family-friendly nature exhibits, kids' activities of all kinds, face painting, kites, food carts, and more. Lots more great adventures coming up in April include helping with creek cleanup, finding spring ephemerals, do you hear a frog, shifting spring, and another wildflower walk. You can find details online at cityofmadison.com parks and on tinyurl.com Madison Fun Adventures and with your local friends groups online. Join nature lovers, families, and friends every week year-round outdoors. It's naturally fun.
And now we'd like to give a very hearty 8 o'clock buzz welcome to our brand new engineer, John Wilson. John, welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz, and why don't you tell us a little bit about why you're here?
Well, thank you. Good to be here. I'm here because I like to, press buttons and move sliders up and down and wake up early.
All right.
You know, also like community radio and all that stuff.
Well, we're certainly happy to have you aboard, and as you know, one of the really important duties of the engineer on the 8 o'clock buzz is to select the song of the week. Do you have a good one to kick us off?
Oh, I believe I do. As you know, today is Eclipse Day, and so I picked out, in my opinion, the most epic song with the word eclipse in the title, which would be Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart. I'll get that playing here and give you a small amount of information that our news director, Charlie Pittman, pulled up for me. Today in Madison, it will be a 87% partial eclipse, forecast to start around 12:50 p.m., reach its maximum at 2:06 p.m., and partially end at 3:19 p.m. We might have 20 to 40% chance of sky covered by clouds. So hopefully, you know, it's clear enough to see that. So again, Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart. A little bit terrified, and then I see the look in your eyes.
In addition to the generous support of listener sponsors, the local businesses and organizations that underwrite WORT's programming play a vital role in the financial health of your community radio station. WORT is grateful for the support of our underwriters, and when you visit these businesses and organizations, please let them know that their support of WORT is appreciated. For information on how to become a WORT underwriter, contact me, Doug Holtz, at 608-256-2001 or visit our website at wortfm.org.
This is Nicholas Wooten on WORT-FM. It is 8:35, and I'm doing a guest interview today. If you are a fan of cinema, you may have spent last weekend at the Wisconsin Film Festival taking in films in a variety of different themes. Many festivals screen films on a broad selection of topics, but others focus on individual themes and issues of public concern. With depression, suicide, and drug addiction increasingly touching the lives of so many, one local activist decided it is time for a film festival about mental health. Max Blaska is an accomplished writer, actor, filmmaker, and mental health activist who is organizing the Mental Health Warrior Film Festival. Max Blaska joins us now in the studio. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz, Max.
Thank you for having me, Nicholas.
Okay, so first of all, just tell us about the film festival. When's it going to happen and where is it?
It's going to be May 18th at Flicks Brewhouse at Easttown Mall. Film start at 1. People will want to get there around 12:30. And lasting all day. We have 20 incredible films ranging from 3 minutes to our headliner feature, A Fang, directed by a fellow mental health warrior filmmaker from Chicago, Richard Bergen.
Okay, and will this be something where you can purchase tickets for members of the public can purchase tickets for individual films, or is it just a one ticket for the whole thing?
One ticket, $15 will cover the entire slate of films.
Okay, and tell us about some of the specific films that you have shown. What are some examples?
One is The Feast, which is an incredible film about anorexia by Olivia Rennie. We have a hilarious comedy from L.A. Actually, the director is flying in from L.A. Mimi Goes to Rehab. The Rose of Sharon, which is a great film by filmmaker Jordan Schroeder, that deals with both mental illness and regards to physical disability as well. I mean, it is a heartbreaker, but it's a very, 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 very good, well done film. And I'm going to be screening a film that I wrote, Last Rung on the Ladder. I'm really, really excited. We're finalizing the schedule. The schedule should be online by Wednesday.
Excellent. Okay. And I want to get to Last Rung on the Ladder, your film, in just a minute. But I want to ask, first of all, mental health has been a subject of yours, something that you have focused on for many years. Why a film festival? Why is that the approach you want to take here?
Well, I firmly believe that one of the greatest tools of someone who struggles with mental illness is performing arts, whether it's film, whether it's comedy, music, etc. And I decided for my first event to focus on film because working on Last Rung on the Ladder, I have met so many interesting people in the local and regional film community that I thought this would be the best foot forward. I'm hoping that this will be an inaugural event. I'm hoping to, in the future, maybe have a sci-fi convention dealing with mental health, things like that. I firmly believe when you're in the theater and there's nothing but the film on the screen and the sound, you're able to take in something much more than in other media. And so I'm really excited about this.
Okay, so you and I have known each other a long time. We've both worked on films. We've worked on films together. Full disclosure, Max and I are friends, known each other for years. And you and I both know how much work making a film is and how collaborative it is. Have you, tell us about some of the stories that have kind of come out of the woodwork in the process of making your film, Last Rung on the Ladder, working with other people, you know, everyone from, a director, other actors, to PAs. What stories about mental health have come out from the woodwork from there?
Well, everyone knows someone who struggles with a mental illness, from severe anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, the like. And this has become, how can I say this? It's very hard for me to interact with other people because of the social anxiety. I doubt everything I say. It's kind of like having a little voice in the back of your head saying, you're going to screw it up, you're going to alienate people, they're not going to like you. all the normal stuff that are passing thoughts that just sit and stay. But one of the things is I learned to trust people. Trust the director, Jeff Blankenship, who altered the script in a way I didn't think was a good idea, but I trusted him, and it turned out to be better than the original. To trust the producer, Kurt Cross, to get things done, and he was like an angel from heaven. We wouldn't have had this film without him. To work with my co-writers, to be on set, it's really incredible the relationships that are born on a film set.
And tell us about the film itself. What was the inspiration for the film, and what are you trying to say in this?
Well, my aunt, Betty Blaska, was a mental health advocate, late 70s, 80s, and 90s. She also introduced me to Stephen King. So when I was on a
tour... Introduced you personally or just...
To King's films.
Okay.
I was able to watch films that my parents probably wouldn't have let me watch at a young age. First film, Maximum Overdrive, when I was 11. And I took a trip with my cousin Olivia to Bangor, Maine, to King Country. And I told James Tinker of SK Tours up there that I was a film writer, and he suggested I try the Dollar Baby program, which was Stephen King gives student writers and independent writers the availability to adapt one of his works for a dollar, as long as you don't. I'm doing it for the experience, not for personal gain or money. And I picked this story because it is about depression. It is about suicide. And my aunt, the illness took her in 1997. And so I wanted to dedicate the film to her. And it's a great story about if someone's struggling and reaching out, to call them back. Don't put it off. Don't think there'll be another day, because you never know when it might be too late.
And how closely did you, how faithful were you to the original story in the making of the film?
The flashback scenes were almost word for word from the story. I changed the modern day. In the original story, he was a high powered attorney. In my story, he's a celebrity psychiatrist. And I added a character because I wanted to manifest the main character, Larry's guilt. And so I made a character called the Carnival Barker of Despair that basically played on his guilt and basically... It's basically the thoughts manifested. And alternate the ending, which I thought gave the point that you never know when it's too late.
Okay. And did... In adapting the story, in making modifications that you just described to the story, did you have to get Stephen King's permission? Were there guidelines you had to follow in terms of your adaptation?
Not really. I did, when I asked for the rights, I did send in an email what I wanted to do. Some of the changes we didn't, and I hope he enjoys it. The Stephen King community seemed to like it.
Right. And so this film will be part of the lineup of the Mental Health Warrior Film Festival.
King gave me the okay to do this, which I'm very, very beneficial, very, very thankful. But again, I am not... this film festival is also a fundraiser for Camp Creatability, a local nonprofit that helps... people on the autism spectrum learn how to make film, and the Rogers Behavioral Health Foundation that helps people who need like the life-changing OCD treatment and able to get there and get the treatment if they have financial troubles.
Yeah. Okay, so you have this film festival you're creating. You've got your own film in it. You've got a number of other films already slated to show. Let's say you do it again next year, the year after, and it expands and it becomes maybe a multi-day festival and becomes a much larger enterprise than it is now. And say you want to expand to have a vintage film about mental health, old classics that struggle that deal with issues of mental health. What kinds of films might you want to have on the lineup then?
I was actually thinking about doing that. I just didn't have the funds for a multi-day festival. Shock Corridor, which is a very like exploitation 50s movie, but it shows how far we've come. Psycho 3, which is a great story about gaslighting, a mental illness. And eventually I want to, like I said, do this and maybe have this as a career, as a mental health advocacy using performing arts.
Okay. We've been speaking with Max Blaska, organizer of the Mental Health Warrior Film Festival. Max, thank you very much for coming to WRT and talking to The Buzz.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to go on with that.
It's 8:48. You're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz here on WORT. This is Brian Standing. April is National Poetry Month, and to celebrate, the Wisconsin Book Festival will host a reading featuring three young poets from Texas, Mississippi, and Wisconsin. Sadia Hassan is has an MFA from the University of Mississippi, and she's the J.C. and Ruth Halls Poetry Fellow. She's a Southern-raised Somali writer, and her work has appeared in Hayden's Ferry Review, Poetry Northwest, Brink, and a variety of other things. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz, Sadia.
Thank you.
Also joining us in the studio is Patricia Humelik. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And she's the daughter of Polish immigrants. She now lives right here in Madison, Wisconsin, and she has developed writing and movement workshops for the Henry Art Gallery and Arts Plus Literature Laboratory, and a variety of other forums as well. Welcome, Patricia.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone is Joshua Burton, who is a poet and educator from Houston, Texas, and received his MFA in poetry from Syracuse University. He's a 2019 Tin House Winter Workshop Scholar, a 2019 Juniper Summer Writing Institute Scholar, and a long list of other awards as well. Joshua Burton, welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to start by just sort of asking all of you. I mean, first off, are you familiar with each other's work prior to this poetry reading? How did this event come about? Patricia, let's start with you.
Yeah, I might kick it over to Joshua, whose book Grace Engine came out, and he invited Sadia and I to join this reading. So maybe Joshua.
All right, Joshua, why don't you tell us about how this reading came to be?
Yeah, while booking tours for the book, I was just thinking of different locations where I knew poets and poets that I admired. And I've been like a fan of Padilla and Patricia's poetry for like a long time. So like once I was looking at like different locations, I was like, this would be a perfect location to be able to read with people I've been wanting to read with for like a very long time. And poets I like just admired for so long. So it's just like, you know, take advantage of like, you know, just see poets from all over the country basically that I maybe just know online, like Instagram or Twitter and things like that.
So you hadn't met either Patricia or Sadia, but prior to inviting them to this reading,
I met Sadia many years ago in Syracuse, only one time in person, and then I met Patricia last year at the writing conference AWP. So like just a, like one time each, but not like a ton.
Okay. So Patricia, when you got the invitation from Joshua, were you surprised?
I was thrilled. I'm a big fan of both Joshua and Sadia's work. Sadia and I have had the pleasure of being in at a residency together in Oregon, and I was just so excited that Joshua's willing to come out to the Midwest to celebrate his book out here. So,
and Sadia, have you done a lot of these types of readings before, and were you surprised to hear from Joshua to come to Madison?
Yeah, I've read with poets that that's the kind of readings that I enjoy most, is being able to read with friends and people whose work I also admire, and was just so excited to see when I had met Josh, he was working on Grace Injun, and so it was just a sweet moment to be able to see it come to fruition and to be able to participate and celebrate his work.
Well, we have a limited amount of time, and we could talk all, you know, for a long time about the, sort of the nature of your work and where you come from, but maybe it might be best to just hear some samples of each of your work. Patricia, do you want to start? Do you have a poem you can read for us?
Sure, I'll kick us off. This poem is from my forthcoming book, We Contain Landscapes, which will be out with Tin House next year, and it's called Beloved. Beloved, you gather me. I am not petals, though I have eaten wildflowers on greens in that glow particular to the other planet, as Miwash described it, that is California, where I walked through salt and fog and found Mary enshrined in chalk on a gash of rock and watched the waves devour themselves till my phone died, so that I was forced to rely on the generosity of strangers. And I did take a photo later of said plate, marveling while sending it to you from the aloneness I'd traveled there to make something out of. Please send a photo of your face. Is it not my purpose to see where exactly laughter has rivered around the eyes I adore? There was a donkey in Petaluma with a soft, steady gaze. I will not turn away from the ache of this world. I'm trying to feel my feet. Let's cry enough to submerge, up to our ankles at least. Don't keep your grief from me.
Thank you. Very nice. Joshua, do you have a poem for us?
Yes. A poem called Grace and Pity for My Grandmother Sue. I was a too religious child, unsettled in the way I spoke. A cistern with a broken ladder inside. A month from one voice to the next. Bible in backpack, Bible in pillowcase. Ictus to the chest over the shirt. I would spend all of my days like this. When I used to hear God, it sounded like the making love of monkeys. A bed is now my grandmother's only home. She only looks past me. We burn the religion like a robe. I tell her to stop trying to take off her clothes to free herself from the wires. I tell her to stop trying to remove her left hand control mitt. She is civil as two sons sitting on the park bench. Her will to live is like my will for muteness. And yet we hear the same departure. The thick wrist of the storm strangling the moral from in hospital is music. The hanging wall quote, the picture of Jesus and lambs blistered my back when I leaned against it. I turned my fear and anger towards it. To me, God's face would look like a missile. long face and ancestral like season. When I met my first God person, they were a frustrated blood to look in. Once I washed the feet of an elder woman in front of the entire congregation, I turned my head left as if waiting for my sin to leave. I become a casualty, a reincarnation of death practice, not unlike Christ, with his Sisyphus wrist and his want of dust. My grandmother has turned looking into a language, a season whittled down to degrees, the almost merry voiced creature, this heelous figured woman. Her right hand is dark purple, thick skin like muscadine. I rub her hand, her hair. Her hand rises. A limb I bend into the shade. Her new voice is always a surprise and always not.
Thank you. That's Joshua Burton. And Sadia Hassan, what do you have for us today?
I'll be reading from my chapbook, Enumeration. My father watches Michelle Obama garden while Mama cooks. And it is strange, no? What a woman does with her hands when no one is looking. And stranger still, the way a man will watch her mouth, stung with hunger as she extols the delight of sweet potatoes, wanting to know if they taste good. My father is so sweet, he says, everything must taste good on the lips of a woman with that much money. But we know money don't make a woman good or full or happy, just as dirt don't clean a woman's hands if there's blood in the water, or a man willing to slaughter a she-goat, blank an entire village of Palestinians, smoke the back of a wedding from the sky while she gardens. And look, look, this is my father talking, a simple man who oversaw a sugar mill in Somalia and not a country in occupied territory, but can you imagine what good my own mama's hands had been careful not to burn down as my father, simple as a life sentence, turned from the sight of gristle on the grill. Thank you.
So the Hassan. So I'm interested for all of you how important sort of place and geography is in your work. The three of you come from very different sort of backgrounds. And I just wonder how, I mean, we heard certainly, you know, in some of your poetry and some of your work, we heard some of those references to place and how important they were. Sadia, why don't we start with you? Can you talk a little bit about how your poetry speaks about where you came from and how that informs your work?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in Somalia and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. While I spent some time in Mississippi, I'm not from Mississippi, but I chose to get my MFA from Mississippi specifically because of the geography of Mississippi and like how crucial it is to the legacy of resistance and like Black people. And just kind of the art that I make is so informed by people trying to get free and thinking about what it means to be in your body when you are displaced, because we came to this country as refugees, right? And so place for me, wherever my loved ones are, it feels home to me, but I also think about the legacy of the land that we stand on and the legacy of colonialism that kind of permeates. I can't think about place without thinking about displacement. And so.
Well, and I'm sorry, we're running out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it there. But thank you so much for joining us. We've been speaking with poets, poets Joshua Burton, Patricia Hemenick, and Sadia Hassan. The event takes place on April 10th, 2024, in the Central Library Community Rooms 301, 302 here in Madison, Wisconsin. It takes place at 7 p.m. For more information, you can go to wisconsinbookfestival.org. Joshua, Patricia, Sadia, thank you so much for joining us on the 8 o'clock buzz.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that wraps up our program for today. I'd like to thank all of our guests. Rima Hachmed, campaign manager for Listen to Wisconsin, Max Blaska, organizer and filmmaker for the Mental Health Warrior Film Festival, and poets Patricia Hemenick, Sadia Hassan, and Joshua Burton. Thanks also to our engineer, John Wilson, and our receptionist, Marla Raboviak. Thanks for the assist today from News Director Charlie Pittman. This is WORT 89.9 FM Madison. We're also live streaming and podcasting at WORTFM.org. My name is Brian Standing. Global Revolutions is coming up next, right after the Insurgent Radio Kiosk.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Monday, April 8th.
MedMen here for Action Weirdos Productions. This week in music history for April 8th. On April 8th, 1994, The Offspring's third album, Smash, was released. Smash is in contention for the best-selling indie release of all time, and for good reason. Its sound was tempered just enough to suit the masses, while the energy and themes resonated with the kids at the time. After its heyday in the 70s and early 80s, punk's popularity faded, giving rise to subgenres like ska punk, hardcore, and grunge. Grunge in particular took off with Nirvana's Nevermind in 1991. Oddly enough, Kurt Cobain was found dead on April 8, 1994, the same day Smash was released. The thirsty earholes of the masses were obviously not satisfied with wallowing in the self-doubt, abuse, neglect, and betrayal so prominent in many of the grungy songs, and welcomed the poignant lessons and energetic sound of punk back. I say yeah! Arguments rage whether the Offspring were punk enough, but the fact remains that in spite of there being a large number of other West Coast punk bands, they, along with Green Day, were the first introduction many kids had to punk.